Welcome to the Bulgarian History Podcast, episode 205, The Die is Cast. Now, first, I want to give a big thanks to Vency Najdenova for making another generous donation to the podcast. And with that, let's get right into things. Now, last time we looked at the summer of 1915 as the Entente and the Central Powers each vied for Bulgaria's attention, making promises of territory for neutrality or active fighting on their side. During this time, the war shifted dramatically in several directions. Italy joined the Entente, leading many to assume the opening of a new front would totally change the war, but it ultimately resulted in only more stalemate. In addition, there were the Allied landings in Gallipoli, which many assumed would quickly knock out the Ottomans, but they failed, as the troops were ultimately withdrawn to the Greek port of Thessaloniki. Ultimately, though, despite a ham-fisted effort by the Entente to win support by buying the Bulgarian wheat harvest and using that to funnel money to some politicians, the government in Sofia ultimately, by the late summer, signed a series of treaties with the Ottomans and Germans to officially join the war on the side of the Central Powers. But, for now, those treaties remain a secret, and Bulgaria has 30 days to mobilize and attack Serbia. About halfway through that deadline in early September, Ferdinand and Crown Prince Boris held a meeting with opposition leaders, excluding Dmitry Blagojev and Janko Sokozov of the two socialist parties. Now, Bell speculates that the goal of this was, quote, to keep the opposition parties off balance while preparations of war went forward, end quote. In other words, to kind of make it seem as if Ferdinand hadn't made a decision yet by consulting them at this stage. Now, I'll quote Bell's account of that meeting, quote, Malinov spoke first, telling the Tsar of his concerns about the rumors that Bulgaria had already committed to the Central Powers, to which Ferdinand replied evasively. Stambolijski then began speaking for the BANU, the Bulgarian Agrarian National Union, repeating the Union's arguments against intervention. As he enumerated the reasons for continued neutrality, he included those that related to the ability and character of Ferdinand himself. And above all, he said, the people's faith in you, your highness, has been shaken and destroyed. In their eyes, the eyes of the people, you have lost your reputation as a skilled diplomatist. He warned Ferdinand that he had been fortunate to escape publication for his part in the Balkan Wars. Remember, he continued, that if this criminal act is repeated tomorrow, we, the members of the Agrarian Union, will not stand between you and the people's wrath. We will become its instrument to execute its severe and just decision. Growing more agitated, Ferdinand challenges Stambolijski to prove that he had put Bulgaria in the service of the Central Powers. Stambolijski refused to discuss the sources of his information, and the exchange between the two men grew more heated. You, Mr. Stambolijski, said Ferdinand, threatened me with revolts and uprisings. You tell me that no one has any faith in my ability, and that someday I will be brought to trial. Yes. You should know that I have a fixed course, a clearly determined policy, and that I will follow that course bravely without fear of your warnings. As I follow that course, I believe I am serving the people much better than you. That is a question. Your services to the people at this moment seem questionable, very questionable. You try to hurl insults, your highness, and at a time when you need the support of everyone, good. Your insults cannot harm me. I am happy that I heard from your lips that which the whole people fears, that which we will challenge. You intend to follow your course, follow it, and I will follow mine. Ferdinand responded, I will follow it because my course, not yours, is in the service of Bulgaria. To which Stambolijski retorted, my course has never led us to disaster, as did yours. And now, if you choose to follow your course, you should think first of your head. Don't worry about me. I am old. Think about your own, which is still young. With his final warning, Ferdinand broke off the audience and left the room. End quote. Now, I know that was a long exchange, but it's an important one, as you could probably tell. Stambolijski represents a rising political power, and above all, his rejection of so much of the political status quo meant that at this point he was ready to openly challenge the government in a way that most other opposition party just would not do. After this meeting, Stambolijski began working on a pamphlet which described what happened at that meeting and actually encouraged soldiers to refuse to fight if war breaks out. Stambolijski's close confidants and fellow agrarian MPs advised him strongly against this, warning that it could easily land him in jail. But the agrarian leader distributed the pamphlets nonetheless. Indeed, when the pamphlets were released, most were immediately confiscated, and Stambolijski was promptly arrested. He was accused of treason, deprived of his seat in the National Assembly, and ultimately sentenced to death. However, Ferdinand commuted this to life in prison, though, to be fair, Stambolijski was put in a fairly comfortable jail cell and allowed to freely communicate with the outside world, so, you know, it was a little more to on the house arrest side than the harsh prison side. But still, Ferdinand had imprisoned the head of one of the country's largest political parties for opposing Bulgaria's entry into the war. And, well, within days, Stambolijski was proven right. General mobilization was announced. Now, to most, this seemed to confirm the belief that Bulgaria would indeed soon enter the war, although the government claimed that this was merely armed neutrality. Rumors swirled that Austrian and German officers had been seen at the military headquarters, that surely Bulgaria was to join the Central Powers any day now. 10 days after the mobilization was announced, the Entente formally demanded that Bulgaria break off diplomatic relations with the Central Powers and expelled their military officials from the country. The government in Sofia refused, and the Entente powers responded by breaking off relations themselves. But before they departed, the British and French ambassadors were surprised to receive a summons to meet Ferdinand at the palace. At that meeting, Ferdinand expressed goodwill towards both countries and lamented the fact that such a break in relations had occurred. All the Entente ambassadors were ultimately given special train cars for their departure and generally afforded every luxury and kindness that Ferdinand could manage. Clearly, the Tsar was not interested in burning any bridges. Still, while Bulgaria, at least to the outside world, had still not formally joined the Central Powers, it was crystal clear what the country was going to do and that this armed neutrality was, well, a farce, if not just a temporary state of affairs. Around the same time, diplomatic relations were broken, an Anglo-French force of 13,000 landed at Thessaloniki. Their goal was to advance north to Skopje and aid Serbia when the expected Bulgarian attack came. Of course, this was far below the 150,000 soldiers that Serbia had requested, but this was all that could be mustered at the last moment by diverting forces from the ongoing Gallipoli campaign. The Serbs, indeed, had been asking for help for months, but the Allies were more interested in the Gallipoli campaign and its promise of knocking the Ottomans out of the war than of helping Serbia hold on longer against the Austro-Hungarians. The British, in particular, hoped to use the promise of more Macedonian territory to keep Bulgaria neutral, but as we all know, the Serbs always refused, so the Allies now had to split their attention between the Balkans in Macedonia and Gallipoli. But Serbia did need help. By this point, they could only muster 11 under-equipped divisions against a combined 23 Austrian, German, and Bulgarian ones. The Serbs had 300 artillery pieces compared to 1,200 for the Central Powers facing them. All this is not even to mention how the Serbs had just managed to hold off the Austrians in the north using several large rivers as a kind of series of defensive lines. But extending the front all the way down to the Bulgarian border to include Macedonia would undoubtedly stretch their forces to and quite far beyond the breaking point. In fact, in late September, Belgrade itself fell to a renewed Austro-Hungarian assault, and both they and the Germans were preparing for a renewed offensive. Okay, but what about Greece? They were getting all these Entente forces landing, so what was happening? Well, it's a bit confusing, so stick with me. Greece is still technically neutral, despite again allowing thousands of Entente troops to live and pass through their territory. And by this point, they were still led by Prime Minister Venizelos, who you'll remember is kind of the main dominating figure of Greek politics. And he's been prime minister for all except a few months since 1910. Though it's worth noting that he had only just recently, in the past few months, retaken the office. However, although Venizelos is the dominant force in Greek politics, the other force is King Constantine, who just so happens to be the brother-in-law of the German Kaiser, and so he generally favors Greece joining the Central Powers. Now, Venizelos is pushing Greece towards intervening on the side of the Entente, using the treaty between Serbia and Greece from the Balkan Wars as justification. Thus, Venizelos has allowed Entente forces to use Greek territory, provided they respect Greek sovereignty and that they not hand over any territory in Macedonia to Bulgaria. As always, Bulgaria must be the sort of end target of all these agreements. However, in doing all of this, Venizelos ultimately overplayed his hand and the king dismissed him. But that didn't mean Greece was just going to, immediately join the Central Powers. Britain and France were still able to essentially force Athens to allow them to turn the port of Thessaloniki into a giant supply base for their army in Macedonia. So, yes, the pro-Entente prime minister has been dismissed, Greece is ruled by a pro-Central Powers king, but his hands are pretty tied, and he's facing a lot of pressure from Britain and France. Now, understandably, Bulgaria was quite anxious to avoid Greece entering the war and opening up a new front to the south. So, in an effort to avoid this, Bulgaria actually agreed to give the districts of Dorian and Geveli to Greece once the war ended in order to essentially buy their continued neutrality. Now, just as a note, these were currently part of Serbia and sat right where Bulgaria, Serbia, and Greece met. So, yeah, the implication is, okay, we Bulgarians are going to take the Serbian-controlled portion of Macedonia, but we'll give you some of these little bits if you stay neutral. Now, it seems Bulgaria was the only Balkan state willing to give up territory for diplomacy at this point, but this is a move clearly motivated by very hard lessons Bulgaria had to learn in recent years. Yet, when Bulgaria announced its mobilization, Greece actually responded by announcing its own mobilization. But despite this, Bulgaria was not too worried about Greece, and the two governments actually established somewhat friendly relations, again because they're both a little more pro-Central Powers at this moment. Officially, though, Greece's policy remains one of armed neutrality with benevolence, you can call it, towards the Entente. Now, 3 days after those Entente troops began to arrive in Greece, a border skirmish broke out between Bulgaria and Serbia, in which Serbian troops took a border post near Belgracik in the north part of their border, before being pushed back to their original lines the next day. Now that same day, Bulgarian troops pushed the Serbs back. They finally occupied the new territory in Thrace they had been given according to the agreement made with the Ottomans 2 months earlier. So, in case you forgot, talked about it last time, when Bulgaria joined the Central Powers, they signed an agreement with the Ottomans that finally kind of formally delineated where their new border was, and Bulgaria got quite a bit of extra new territory as a result, so they're now kind of occupying this for the first time. Now, 3 days after all of this, on October the 1st, it finally happened. Bulgaria officially entered the First World War on the side of the Central Powers by declaring war on Serbia. 2 days later, Russia, France, and Great Britain all declared war on Bulgaria, and the country was now entering its third war in 3 years. It was also now, for the first time in its history, actively at war with Russia, the country which had done so much to both help and hinder Bulgaria's independence and development, and which so many Bulgarians still felt of as a kind of eternal friend. So, yeah, it's a very open question as to how the Bulgarian people, the Bulgarian military, political leaders will respond to this new reality of being at war with Russia. Misha Glenny writes how, quote, Bulgaria's entry had the effect of transforming the conflict in the region from an extension of Anglo-German or Austro-Russian rivalry into a Third Balkan War, whose participants cared not one iota whether the Germans or British won the global struggle, except as it impacted on them. Bulgaria attacked Serbia not to open up supply lines from Berlin to Istanbul, but to regain Macedonia. The Great War in the Balkans served chiefly to underline the deepened and deadly competition which had developed since the Congress of Berlin between Bulgaria and Serbia, who were now the two main competitors in a bitter struggle for regional hegemony. In October 1915, the Bulgarians prepared to avenge themselves for the perceived betrayal by the Serbs during the Second Balkan War. End quote. Now, Bulgaria joining the war was a major diplomatic embarrassment for Britain and France. British newspapers and politicians levied blistering criticisms against the government for allowing this to happen. You'll recall that Winston Churchill had talked a lot and really criticized the government he was a part of for its failure to take Bulgaria that seriously. In France, this even led to the resignation of the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister. The British ambassador in St. Petersburg, for one, wrote in his memoirs, quote, "Could we have but one Bulgaria to our side, Romania would almost certainly have cast her lot with us in the autumn of 1915. Turkey's fate would have been sealed and the whole course of the war would have been changed. Had Serbia been forced to give up Macedonia, the war would have been considerably shortened and Russia might have been spared the horrors of the Bolshevik Revolution." End quote. British Prime Minister Asquith said that Bulgaria's decision ended, quote, "one of the most important chapters in the history of diplomacy," end quote. He, too, blamed Russia, and especially Serbia, for pushing Bulgaria towards the Central Powers. Now, it's all speculation, but you can see how momentous Bulgaria's decision was and the importance it was viewed with at the time. In a statement about the beginning of the war, Tsar Ferdinand noted how the negotiations showed that both alliances agreed that Macedonia rightfully belonged to Bulgaria, going on to say, quote, "Only our treacherous neighbor Serbia remained stubborn in the face of the advice given to her by friends and allies. Bulgarians, the national ideas which we all treasure made it our duty in 1912 to call our heroic army to battle. A battle in which it unfolded the banners of freedom and broke the chains of slavery. Our Serbian allies then became the main cause of our loss of Macedonia. Tired and exhausted, though undefeated, we have furled our standards in the expectation of better days. The good days arrived much sooner than we could have expected. The European war is nearing its end. The victorious armies of the Central Powers are in Serbia and advancing rapidly. Our cause is just and holy." End quote. So that gives you some idea as to how Ferdinand thought about this, and in particular, how he was explaining the war to the general population. Now, there's the question. How did the Bulgarian people greet this news? Well, news that the war had finally began was greeted with not the exuberant joy which had been seen in the great capitals of Europe when the war started there a year earlier, nor with the revolution that Stamboliski had predicted. Constant describes how, quote, "to most Bulgarians, going to war this time seemed not like a new adventure, but the completion of an unfinished task," end quote. So not a lot of excitement about this war, sort of a begrudging acceptance of what it was felt Bulgaria had to do. Now, Bulgaria's plan for the advance into Serbia was for the First Army to advance northwest towards the temporary Serbian capital of Niš, while the Second Army advanced against the arriving British and French forces into Macedonia with the aim of severing the vital rail link between Niš and Thessaloniki in order to prevent further Allied supplies and reinforcements from reaching the Serbs. At the same time, the Third Bulgarian Army was to remain in the north to guard the Romanian border, out of fear that, well, they could see a repeat of the Second Balkan War should Romania join the conflict. Now, I want to take a minute to understand how the Bulgarian army entering the war in late 1915 differed from the one that had been defeated 2.5 years prior. First, there was leadership. you might assume that the Bulgarian army would be led by the generals who had just seen it through two Balkan wars. But it seems Ferdinand was hesitant to give Savov the reins again after his overseeing the disastrous Second Balkan War. Many other candidates were disqualified because they had Russophilic tendencies, and as a result, army command was ultimately given to the relatively junior General Nikola Zhekov. Just a few months earlier, he had actually been a colonel, and, well, he was only around 50 years old. Actually, his exact year of birth in the town of Sleven is unclear, but around 50. He had studied both in Bulgaria and Italy before fighting in every Bulgarian war, beginning with the one against Serbia back in 1885, so he was experienced. But while he did have experience, that didn't extend to the experience of leading massive armies as he was about to do. For Ferdinand, though, he was pro-German, and unfortunately, as we'll later learn, very anti-Semitic, and ultimately was fairly well-suited to working closely with the Tsar. All that said, Zhekov would for now operate under the overall command of German Field Marshal August von Mackensen. So the Germans were in charge of the total kind of Balkan front, and he'd be getting orders from Mackensen. Now, it should go without saying that 2.5 years earlier after the Balkan Wars, the Bulgarian army was still far from fully recovered. An additional issue was the fact that many of their artillery pieces were from France and Russia, meaning it would be very difficult to get more ammunition for them. The army was also desperately short of proper clothing, only having about 2/3 of most items like greatcoats and boots that it desperately needed. All that said, though, Bulgaria was expecting a large influx of supplies from Germany to help aid in these deficiencies. Now, all that said, Bulgaria still fielded a formidable army of 616,680 men after mobilization was completed. Now, to give you some idea, that was about 12% of the total population and 1/4 of all men in the country. But not all those men were terribly enthusiastic about the prospect of going to war yet again. Less than a week after war was declared, the 27th Chempinski Regiment actually rebelled and refused to fight. Now, I couldn't find too many details about this event and what happened afterwards, but it's important because it gives us an idea that even at the start of the war, some of these soldiers were not willing to fight, which, you know, looking to the future, doesn't bode well for what might happen months or years into that time. Now, ultimately, the first portion of the war is set to be pretty easy for Bulgaria. Serbia is hardly a challenge, considering it's barely holding back the Germans and Austro-Hungarians, let alone the Bulgarians. So the expectation is that the Bulgarian army is about to walk into Macedonia and realize their greatest national ambitions with relative ease. Now, if entire regiments, though, not just individual soldiers, are ready to stand up and oppose the war, again, what's going to happen when it gets tough? Remember that the firmly anti-war parties, the broad socialists, the narrow socialists, and the agrarians, have all surged in popularity recently, meaning that plenty of their supporters have just been mobilized to fight. So, that may pose a potential problem, because, well, if your army is full of people who are very anti-war, they could potentially spread that message. If things get difficult, fellow soldiers might become more receptive to that message, and it poses a lot of dangers. All right. So Bulgaria is at war again, poised to march straight into Serbia, and with the help of the Germans and Austrians, quickly defeat their old rival. But what then? What happens after that? Bulgaria is already at war with Great Britain, France, and Russia, and the country is hardly in a position to survive a truly long war. And it's not like knocking Serbia out of the war is going to end anything. So it's a question that hangs in the air. I'm sure many Bulgarians at this moment are wondering, what happens after we defeat Serbia? Well, at this moment, the Radoslavov government is promising the war will be won quickly, but, well, that's just a promise. What if it isn't? What role could Bulgaria even play to end the war once Serbia is defeated? And, well, with that series of questions, I'm going to wrap up this episode. Bulgaria has finally joined the Great War. In the process, the agrarian firebrand Stambolijski has been arrested, the army has been mobilized, And for the first time, Bulgaria is at war with not one, but three of the European great powers, including Russia. Now, where all this leads is anyone's guess. Next time, though, we'll dive straight into that war itself, covering Bulgaria's fights against the Serbs and their response to facing such a brutal assault from nearly all sides. So, thank you for listening. This episode was written and produced by me, Eric Halsey. The theme music was written and performed by the talented Teddy Raven. As always, go to bghistorypodcast.com to find all kinds of extra information, maps, timelines, list of important people, lists of sources, anything I can think of that will help you better understand, explore, learn about these topics. It's all in there, so you will want to check it out, and I will see you next time.